Welcome into another episode of the Bengals Beat Podcast, the wild card playoff edition today as we get ready for the Bengals' upcoming matchup with the Raiders in the wild card round, a game on Saturday at 4:30 at Paul Brown Stadium. I'm Kelsey Conway here with Charlie Goldsmith. And at the beginning of the season, you didn't know what to make of these Bengals. Projections went from anywhere between, you know, 6 to 8 wins for most people projecting the Bengals' schedule. Charlie, I know you said you predicted 7 wins, right?
Correct.
I think I predicted 8. But here they are at 10-7, playing for a chance to really make a run in the AFC. So let's start, before we even talk about this upcoming matchup with the Raiders, what game do you feel like really changed the landscape of this season for the Bengals in terms of they went from a team where you're like, you know, they have really good offense, but if they can't protect Joe Burrow, but if they can't do this, but when do you think you really started to look at the Bengals as, okay, they should actually enter some of these games as favorites?
I think the Ravens game for both sides of the ball was that moment. Joe Burrow, it was the beginning of his transcendent extended play and outside the pocket creativity. I think it was the first drive of the game.
You're talking about the first matchup in October?
The first matchup of the Ravens game.
The one on the road.
The first drive of the game, Burrow had this crazy spin out of the pocket, and that kind of set the tone for all the plays he made that season. He had a deep ball down the field. Jamar Chase had obviously his moment where he showed that he wasn't just a deep threat. He wasn't just a rookie receiver having a good year. He was already a standout receiver in the NFL. And defensively, I learned more about defensive coordinator Lou Anarumo in that game than I have any other game the Bengals have played this season. He came up with a brand new scheme to face the Ravens. He kind of took some pages out of the Ravens defense's book and threw it at their offense, and he held Lamar Jackson in check for the first time in his career coaching the Bengals. So on both sides of the ball, as I think the Bengals improved to 5-2 on that day, I learned a lot.
I think that the game for me that really was telling of the Bengals was the second meeting between the Bengals and the Steelers on November 28th. Following Thanksgiving weekend, because the Bengals entered that game needing to win this game to really put themselves in a good position in the division. And you saw what they did the first time around against Steelers, but there was that whole notion of they didn't have TJ Watt, et cetera. Was that the same Steelers defense? They completely dominated the Steelers at home. And they looked to me like, okay, even if you're going to throw the best pass rusher in the league, they're not gonna lose any confidence on offense. And just the way that they dominated as a team, I think that really showed what this Bengals team could be. And ever since then, there hasn't been too many clunker games for them. What did you think was, while we're on the subject of talking about the season, what did you think was the worst Bengals performance you saw this year?
That's interesting. The two that clearly are in the mix are the Chargers and the Jets. I think the Bengals' offense actually played really well against the Jets. I think that's kind of a hot take, but I did believe that. So I guess I defer to the Chargers game, where there were just three actually, the most uncharacteristic moments of the season. Jonah Williams allowing a strip sack fumble against an edge rusher, and Nwosu, who hasn't been productive at all this year. Chase bobbling the ball right to a cornerback for a pick, and then Joe Mixon just dropping the ball untouched on a drive where the Bengals could have taken the lead. Those were kind of the moments that were kind of the stereotype about the Bengals and their slow starts. Everyone said they came into games not focused and had these breakdown plays. I thought those were three of the only true breakdown plays of the year. That hasn't been a theme since, but overall, I guess the fact that those plays even happened certainly was a sign of their worst game.
I would say the Jets game for sure. I just remember being at that game and just wondering if the Bengals had even, you know, woken up. They all, you know, and the weird thing about it is they almost could have won the game, but the fact that they let, you know, Mike White and the Jets offense kind of roll on them defensively was something that I don't think we were planning to see, and we haven't really seen all season long. And I think that game really stands out to me because of all the talk that we did to Zach Taylor, to the players, about going into that game and not having that game be where the Bengals take advantage of the Jets and don't play hard. And they had the classic upset in a team that goes up against a team that they easily should beat and they don't get it done. That was a pretty bad loss for the Bengals, but they've responded in the right way. So now let's talk about this weekend's game. Let's move on to the game that everybody is talking about. The Bengals hosting the Raiders. It'll be a rematch. The first time around when these teams met, when the Bengals traveled to Vegas, They won, I believe it was, let me pull it up right now, 32-13. And Joe Mixon rushed for 123 yards, but it was a very close game at halftime. That score shows that it might have been a blowout. It was not. It took that big touchdown drive, which was what one of Joe Burrow's and Ja'Marr Chase's best plays, even though it wasn't a crazy explosive play. It was the turning point in that game that really put them ahead, and then they were able to kind of run Mixon to win the game. But the Bengals enter as, you know, pretty big favorites here, and there's good reason for that. But as we've all seen, the Raiders have made a little bit of a surge after a very, very controversial year. I mean, they deserve a lot of credit, I think, and their interim head coach does, because a lot of them could have just, you know, threw in the towel and called this season a wash after what they went through with their coaches, head coach having to resign, and, you know, a couple of the players getting into some trouble and not being with the team anymore. There's just been a lot there in Vegas, but they found a way with Derek Carr to lead this team to a postseason berth. So, you know, once you get into the playoffs, you get everybody's best shot.
And I think that the most important thing to note with the Raiders, as you mentioned, is I believe they lead the NFL in game-winning drives, game-winning touchdown drives in particular. Carr's strength is I think he's got a really good sense of timing, pocket awareness, mobility, and chemistry and timing with Darren Waller and Hunter Renfrow. It's an offense that kind of poses some unique challenges. And like, look at how Carr connected on those two huge throws on that last drive that set up the game-winning field goal outside the numbers to set up that field goal. It's a team that's just made plays, as kind of corny and cliche as that sounds. They've won several close games to get to this point in the postseason, finishing the year winning four straight. And between Carr and Renfrow and Waller and Crosby and Ngakoue, there's playoff caliber, Pro Bowl caliber talent on the Raiders.
Mm-hmm. And so let's talk about the Raiders defense first, then we'll switch their offense. Raiders defense led by Max Crosby and Yannick Ngakoue, and then they have Hayward back in the secondary. It's kind of like their veteran leader. Crosby, heading into the game against the Chargers, led the league in quarterback pressures. He's a Pro Bowler. It's a really cool story about someone who's really transformed his life and made the most of a second chance. But Max Crosby is as good of a pass rusher as they've seen, and they did a pretty good job on him in the second half after they adjusted some in the first meeting. But when you look at stats-wise, Yannick Ngakoue leads them in sacks, so they present a challenge, and they've gotten some pretty good play at their interior defensive tackles. I know their starter got injured against the Chargers, and it's unlikely – well, he's not going to be playing in this game, so the Bengals get a little break in terms of the interior pass rush there. But for the Bengals, it all starts there. When you went back and watched the game, Charlie, what stood out to you about how the Bengals adjusted to the Raiders' pass rush through the game?
Yeah, what they did was there were two plays in particular that stand out to me. There was a strip sack fumble early, and then there was a play, I believe, on the second series, third down, where Burrow rolled out. He basically got flushed out of the pocket right away from Ngakoue and from Crosby. Basically, the Bengals then made an adjustment to become a team that I think only took two total shots down the field. I think both were slightly overthrown balls to Chase, and relied instead on, as simple as it sounds, quick game and run game. That was the identity in that game more than any other game this season. I think a very important touchdown to hit on as well is that Isaiah Prince is at right tackle now. I was very impressed with how he did in one-on-one coverage against both the Bosas and a Myles Garrett. It wasn't just him. The Bengals coaching staff has really evolved this season in giving Prince more help. They have a brand new split back formation that they use for max pass protection. They did a thing against Cleveland, and they've done it earlier this season as well. They're able to line up out of empty, and they use either the slot receiver or the tight end to really give a hard chip before running out on their routes. All of those little things led to the Bengals. I know Joey Bosa only played 9 snaps, but against Garrett and against Nick Bosa in those matchups, I thought the Bengals and Prince in particular held up a lot better than I expected.
Yeah, it's worth noting that when I asked Brian Callahan which offensive lineman has been the most improved this season, he did say Prince, so good point bringing him up. And like you said, yes, he will be there in place of Riley Reiff. And the last time those two teams met, Riley Reiff was starting at right tackle. But other than that, for the most part, the Bengals are healthy, which is huge. Quentin Spain looks like he's going to be back. He got injured in the Chiefs game, but Zach Taylor's optimistic he's going to be able to go, which is huge. And then everybody else will be the same. Kim Adeniji continues to be the starter, and it looks like they're going to be all set up front, and Joe Mixon will be back as he was placed on the COVID reserve list last week. And then also on the defensive side of the ball, Trey Hendrickson and Larry Ogunjobi and those guys will be back as well. Sam Hubbard was one of the players that popped up on the injury report last week who got an extra weekend of rest. So the Bengals head into this game rested, healthy, and ready to go. So I think you'll be seeing the best out of them. On the defensive side of the ball, let's talk about what challenges the Raiders offense pose as of right now. That was a very bad game. Derek Carr and his offensive weapons played against the Bengals in the first meeting. Not to take anything away from the way the Bengals defense have played, but I remember leaving that game wondering how the Raiders had won as many games as they had with the way that they played on offense against the Bengals. The Bengals defense has really grown throughout the year, and they've held their own against, you know, some of these really good offenses. When you look at all of the weapons, whether it's Darren Waller, Zay Jones, Hunter Renfro, the top slot guy, or Josh Jacobs, who played very well against the Chargers, which weapon scares you the most based off of what you've seen from the Bengals defense and their inability to stop this type of player?
It's Waller who shredded the Bengals out of play action in particular, and then he had one great big play on kind of that one scoring drive the Raiders had there in the fourth quarter. And the thing is, though, the Raiders are a unique offense. I tried to find another offense this season that is as reliant on their interior pass catchers as the Raiders are. Waller and Renfro are basically the only standout notable pass catchers on the Raiders. Zay Jones has had a solid breakout season, but he's been more of a career backup than anything else who's kind of taken a step forward this year. Waller and Renfro do a good job playing off each other. They use pivot routes. They line up close to each other. They run off each other, set picks, stuff like that. But because the Raiders aren't as dangerous with their outside receivers, what the Bengals did, and I was surprised, I didn't remember this until I went back and watched, Chidobe Awuzie and Eli Apple spent more time on Waller in that game than I think they spent on any other tight end the Bengals have faced all season. Trey Flowers barely played. It wasn't a game where I saw Von Bell matched up against the tight end a lot either. Jesse Bates allowed one big play, but he got fewer reps against Waller after that. So this is a game where it's a cornerback versus tight end matchup, which the Bengals haven't had the luxury to do very often. And because the Raiders lack those outside receiving threats, they'll get to put their best pass coverage guys on the best receiving threats.
Yeah, it's been an interesting season for Waller because his stats don't really show that he's done a whole lot. I know he's dealt with some injuries and missed some time, but he is physically what the Bengals have struggled against, these really big physical tight ends. Darren Waller's huge and he's got great hands. I think for me, the player that I can't wait to see the defensive game plan against is Hunter Renfro, who has played extremely well. And in my opinion, you could put him and Tyler Boyd up there as, you know, one and two of the top slot guys. Hunter Renfro has over 1,000 receiving yards and 9 touchdowns. He's been a factor in the red zone. And I think obviously you point to Mike Hilton picking up those type of guys and he's played better as of late. But Hunter Renfro is a very good player, and he has a great rapport with Derek Carr. And like you said, Carr is very good with timing, and he's a veteran quarterback. And I think Hunter Renfro is the guy to really watch. Waller's certainly going to be a part of it. He'll likely play because he played last week. But Hunter Renfro is, in my opinion, the guy that they really have to watch out for.
But the thing is, you know, 4 catches, 30 yards in that first matchup. I think that Mike Hilton has struggled when he gets pinned against bigger wide receivers this season. Like, there was that one play to Mike Williams against the Chargers that always stands out to me. When you kind of pair him and kind of force a big receiver his way, that he has to kind of switch and guard that guy. But Renfro is basically exactly the same size. Hilton had the speed to cover him. They basically followed him in every one-on-one man-to-man defense setup they played, and it was as impressed with Hilton as I've been all season. It was one of his highest graded games of the year, and I think that's another one of the reasons the Bengals invested as much as they did in a slot corner, because they saw the value in having someone who can go up against this kind of quick slot receiver that can be a really dangerous weapon.
Yeah, so you know, you don't really have to worry about, like, the big receiver like the Chargers had with Keenan Allen and Mike Williams. They just pose, like you said, different problems. When you look at the Bengals and this game in particular, do you think it'll be a game that the Bengals rely on Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, Tyler Boyd or Joe Mixon?
I have a really hard time with this one, but I think that's the answer I'm going with, and I'm saying that as a compliment to what the Bengals have done. The first Ravens game in particular was kind of a statement win for them. I think it was one of the games they were most proud of all year because it showed they could beat you as a power run team. Obviously, they beat you as a Higgins team, a Chase team, a Boyd team against Denver. There have been games where, like, Pittsburgh and, like, the Raiders, they've used the run to establish an offensive identity, and there have been games like the Chiefs and the second matchup against the Ravens where it's been Joe Burrow running around the backfield and throwing the ball 50 times a game. I think that the Bengals, you know, part of the reason they added Frank Pollock is they wanted to be a more multiple team, and they wanted to be a team that could line up in more ways to kind of be able to make the first move. And, you know, I don't really know what to expect. I could see them beating the Raiders in a lot of ways this weekend, or having the opportunity to have success in a lot of ways this weekend, kind of as a testament to the evolution and the versatility the offense has gained.
Yeah. So let's talk about one more topic before we wrap this up. I want to talk about what Zach Taylor said yesterday. He's been asked a lot of questions about, obviously, the playoff drought, expectations heading into this game. And I think one of the things that I can commend Zach Taylor for big time this year is his consistency in the way he approaches his team. And I actually asked him about it, because if you've ever seen on a game, obviously, you know, he does get in the ref's ear, which I think is, you know, makes for good TV for the guys watching at home. But other than when he's yelling at refs, Zach Taylor is not a yeller. I've never seen him yell at practice. And that's not to say he doesn't know how to crack the whip. He just does it in a way that he thinks is his best way of communicating with his players. He said, "This week, we're keeping things exactly the same because we're not going to change who we are just because the stakes of the game are getting higher." And I thought what Brian Callahan said about it was really interesting. He said, if you're game planning and doing more this week, you've been doing a disservice to your players and coaches the entire season if you can bring more this week. I am not worried based off of the way we've seen Zach Taylor coach and the way Joe Burrow leads and some of these guys. I don't anticipate this being a game where the Bengals are unprepared and the moment is too big for them. We always talk about how they're such a young team, but I don't think that based off of the way we've seen them end the season, that there should be any worry from Bengals fans on this being too big of a moment and the Bengals not being ready to be here.
I think that, like, all right, so when I think of the structure of the Bengals front office and the relationship and the dynamic between Mike Brown and Duke Tobin and how that impacts coaching and how that impacts player personnel decisions, I think that a tone overall is set from the top that then percolates below. And I think that the tone the ownership and the front office set when they hired Zach Taylor, when they made specific moves in the draft, and when they recruited the free agents that they did, I think the tone that they set was they wanted to turn the page. They wanted a new modern offense. They wanted a head coach with a completely different style than what they'd had. And they wanted in Burrow and Chase and in all of the free agents they signed, experienced winners and leaders on the proven stage. And the reason you do that and the reason that message comes from the top and filtered to, again, Zach and Zach's coaching decisions in the front office's player personnel decisions, the reason you do that is because when you get to this moment, you aren't burdened with the franchise's history like the Bengals really were burdened, especially in 13, 14, and 15. It's just so far removed from that, and there are such different experiences that all these people the Bengals have had are drawing on, and again, the result in that is a team that is, as Zach Taylor said, just the 2021 Bengals and nothing else.
Yeah, and that's all they'll be judged off of, how they play this weekend, but it should be a fun one. So now, we've talked about the Bengals and the Raiders matchup. It is a good time to bring in Jason Hoffman to talk about the rest of the playoff games this weekend and get you set if you're planning to bet or make any bets this weekend. Let me tell you about the new sports app we've launched as part of our USA Today family. USA Today Sports Plus is the new sports app that puts the fans first. Get the latest scores, stats, and standings, and enjoy interactive experiences with our award-winning sports writers. Download USA Today Sports Plus from the Apple or Google Play stores today. USA Today Sports Plus, fan harder. Jason, can you believe it is wild card weekend? It feels like we were just breaking down the week three spread, right?
We are here.
We made
it. What a glorious time it is. And it's also time to make our listeners some money. The regular season, we ended up to the good a little bit. But that's all behind us now. It's nothing but positive vibes in the playoffs.
Absolutely. All right. So as you and I obviously both work in sports because we love sports, but like the playoff, I don't think that there's a better weekend of sports than wild card weekend because you get games Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. It is like an NFL fan's dream, right?
Exactly. The shift to having a Monday game this year is outstanding. And I am looking forward to that game between the Cardinals and the Rams on Monday night. It's going to be awesome.
Well, and how about this? Bengals. So I'm thankful that the Bengals are playing Saturday because we'll work Saturday night into the night. And then, you know, Sunday will be a day that we can rest up, hopefully for the divisional round, hoping the Bengals win, but be able to check out the games.
Yeah, exactly. And we'll be, you know, waiting to see who the Bengals will face in the divisional round.
Absolutely.
But it's going to be great to have Sunday and Monday. Mm-hmm. Well, Monday we'll have to work, but having Sunday and then that game Monday night after the work day's over will be outstanding.
All right, so let's kick it off with, I know you usually save it till the end, but it is the first game of the playoff weekend. So give us your thoughts on the Raiders at Bengals. Were you surprised at how much the Bengals were favored by? What are your main thoughts?
So I actually thought the number on this was low.
Ah, interesting.
I thought Bengals should be closer to 7-8, similar to that Tampa Bay Philly line of 8.5.
Okay.
Just because if you look at who the Raiders have beaten and how they've won, and the fact that these two teams played in Vegas.
Right.
There's nothing that says to me Vegas will get within a touchdown.
Okay.
Now that's just me. And maybe I'm a little too overconfident, especially with the Raiders playing that late game on Sunday, a big emotional division game. They pulled it out in overtime, where everyone thought that, you know, it was the prisoner's dilemma. We're going to have two teams just kneel it out and call it a day and both go to the playoffs.
Right.
That being said, I thought the number was going to be closer to 8, like mm-hmm. I said. I like the Bengals minus the 6.5 here. I also like the under. I don't know that this is going to be a high scoring game. I think it's going to be very similar. I'm going to call a 10 point game, maybe a 24-10 a 10 point game, maybe like a 24-14 or a 21-10 or 21-11 type deal.
Okay.
I just don't see a high scoring affair.
Okay. I agree. I think it'll be closer than I think some people think, but I think it's going to be like a touchdown type of win. I don't think they're going to win by as much as they did the first time around, but I would agree with the spread. I think I'm favoring the Bengals by a touchdown. So
there you go, and you'd cover by a half point.
So let's move
for right now, at least,
along to Patriots at Bills, where the Bills are a favorite. Because I think it's two reasons. They're at home, obviously, and the Patriots have not played well as of late, but these teams always play each other close.
Yeah, I don't like the 4.5 number here.
Interesting.
And actually, spoiler alert, not only do I not like the 4.5 number, I don't like the Bills to win this game.
Really?
Josh Allen just does not strike fear into my heart, especially when he faces Bill Belichick.
Yeah.
These two teams swapped road wins this year in their divisional games.
Yeah.
Bill Belichick knows every single thing in front of him, at least for this game. This is going to be my first upset pick for a dog to win outright. I like the Patriots to go into Buffalo and win in a low-scoring. You could put on the film from the 1930s and 40s, I think, of Army Navy, and that's what we're going to see this weekend between the Patriots and the Bills. I think the Patriots say you're going to have to beat us on the ground. I don't think Mac Jones is at the level right now where he can take over a game with his arm. So again, I hate to disappoint folks out there, and you know what? I like exciting football, so hopefully I'm wrong. But I'm picking two low-scoring affairs on Saturday, and I think the Patriots edge out the Bills at Buffalo.
Huh. And the Buffalo Bills seem to run into some trouble in the postseason. Like, remember last year, everybody was so hyped up about them, and then, you know, they weren't able to get it done against the Chiefs. I could see that happening, but right now it's hard for me to pick against the Bills, so I'm going to go against you there.
All right. That's two games where that's fine. That's okay. Good. Give the people options. Whoever they want to fade, they can fade.
I see where you're saying, like, you know, look, Bill Belichick, and that was my fear if the Bengals were going to play him because he's such a good coach. But I just think, like, the Patriots have not played well recently, and the Bills certainly seem, when Josh Allen's on, he's a good player, so they roll with him. All right, so let's move on to Sunday, and the Eagles are traveling to Tampa to take on the reigning Super Bowl champs against the Bucks. The Bucks, heavy favorite at home, and just obviously the home being home has a lot to do with it. But do you believe in the Eagles, Jason?
I absolutely do not. And the problem is, the one thing they do very well is the one thing Tampa Bay can stop right now, which is the run game.
Yep.
I think 8.5 is a good number here. I think it could have been – oh, all the birds say hi. I think it could have been closer to 10, not as wild as the Steelers-Kansas City Chiefs line is. But, yeah, I think Tampa Bay covers this number. They stifle the run. The Eagles run ends here. I'd take the Bucks minus 10.
I agree. I think that Eagles, look, they were better than people thought they would be in Nick Sirianni's first year. And Jalen Hurts, I think, played to his potential. Do I think he's going to be able to lead that team to consistent playoff berths year in and year out? No. But they made the most of their season. But like you said, their whole entire offense revolves around the run game. What their quarterback can do when he's scrambling. And like you said, the Bucs are one of the best run defenses in the NFL. So I think heavy, heavy lean to the Bucs. All right, now to the game, which I think of all of the games this weekend is the most intriguing. And clearly the NFL thinks so too, because they put it in the 4 o'clock window on Sunday. 49ers at Cowboys, where the Cowboys are a favorite at home. 3-point favorite. What do you think about this matchup?
It's at Dallas, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this is going to be my second upset pick of the week.
Okay.
I like the 49ers to win outright.
I knew
getting
that.
3.5. I do not trust what I've seen from the Cowboys. I think the Cardinals exposed a lot of what they don't do well on defense when they played a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And while the 49ers don't have that same kind of dynamic offense, especially at the quarterback position, I think they can control the game on the ground. George Kittle will go off against that defense. I know Micah Parsons is a favorite to win Defensive Rookie of the Year, but he's only one guy. I think it'll be a good game, but I think San Francisco pulls it out.
Yeah, the 49ers are hot, and it's hard to argue with what they're doing with Deebo Samuel in that run game, because just when you think you just have to sell out to stop their run, Deebo Samuel then goes and throws a touchdown pass. So they're a hard offense to figure out. So I agree with you. I think the 49ers are going to win this game. I haven't and will probably not, for whatever reason, believe in the Cowboys this season. I think they've got a ton of talent, but for whatever reason, when the moment is huge, they don't seem to deliver. So I'm with you.
Correct.
I'm rolling with the 49ers.
And how about, as much as, you know, we can get to the Rams here in a little bit, but as much as Sean McVay gets shined for his play designs, window dressing, all that, the thing is the 49ers do absolutely confuse defenses. Oh. And it's impressive what Kyle Shanahan's done with that offense.
Yeah, Kyle, in my opinion, Kyle Shanahan's the best offensive mind in the game right now. And
I will not disagree with you on that.
Sean McVay learned from Kyle. So, you know, I'm glad that the 49ers are relevant again, because they're just a fun offense to watch. If you like the X's and O's of football, the 49ers are a fun team to watch. All right, so moving on to the Steelers and the Chiefs. I cannot believe the Steelers made the playoffs, but this is what they do. They find a way every year. The Chiefs, big time favorite here. What do you think?
So, as that game was in overtime, my wife said to me, the Steelers will not just bleeping die. And this is true. But I don't think they have a choice this week. Kansas City, they've already played a few weeks ago. Kansas City just took them out to the woodshed. I think it's a little closer, but I don't know that Pittsburgh covers 12.5 here.
Yeah.
It's a big ask, especially against the Chiefs, who got back on track after that loss to the Bengals. I'll take the Chiefs minus the points here. Ben Roethlisberger's run ends. And I will add that I thought it was hilarious that the Ravens did a tribute video to Ben and only showed him getting sacked and losing games before that game last week. I thought that was pretty good.
That's what rivalries are about, though.
That's right. Absolutely.
You know what I mean? All right. So let's wrap it up with the final game on Monday night. The Arizona Cardinals traveling to SoFi Stadium to take on the Rams for the third time this season. The series is split 1-1. The Rams got the last one, but the first time around early on in the season, the Cardinals ran all over the Rams. Who do you like in this matchup?
I like the number. I like taking the 4.5 with the Cardinals. I don't know that they win outright, but I also cannot in good faith put money on Matt Stafford to do anything. I'm serious. The last few weeks of this season, he has just made some absolutely boneheaded throws that put his team in bad spots. And I don't know that it gets any better this week. And especially when you talk about a divisional rematch, there's nothing that they're going to surprise the Cardinals with. So I like Cardinals plus the 4.5.
Yeah, and I also like the Cardinals because they're coming off of a loss. And the last time they played the Rams, they lost, and it was a pretty bad loss for the Cardinals. I always seem to want to favor those teams rather than the team that's won more often, because it just kind of seems like, all right, they know what they did the first time around. I think Cliff Kingsbury and Kyler Murray will have a better plan, and I think the Cardinals win this game too.
And the getting a little healthier at the right time.
Yeah.
They've been kind of ravaged. So, yeah, now we started off the week. I said we're going to have low scoring games. I think this as well becomes a track meet in spots. But yeah, I just bring the 4.5 there.
Yeah, for sure. Well, what is that your game of the weekend to watch?
That is.
Okay.
As far as from an entertainment perspective, obviously, I think the Bengals, because the over-under I'd really like to set is how many times they're going to show Bo Jackson getting his hip broken in 1991 against the Bengals on that NBC broadcast. But yeah, I think the two bookends of the weekend, Bengals Raiders and Cardinals Rams, with 49ers Cowboys in the middle, I think those are the three games that'll be the best this week. We'll see.
Yeah, it should be fun. Well, if the Bengals make it to the divisional round, we'll be back to keep talking playoffs. But if not, dang, this would be our last segment. That's sad to think about.
Oh, no, I'm still going to hop in and ride the playoff wave all the way through.
Okay, so we'll be back for the playoffs.
Correct.
Okay.
We'll figure that out. But yes, postseason NFL betting is always my favorite.
All right. Well, don't worry. We won't be going anywhere. Everyone, enjoy the games this weekend. Jason, you want to get us out of here?
Yep. Just want to remind everybody that all lines are provided by Tipico Sportsbook. Tipico is a partner of Gannett Company, Inc., our parent company. And Gannett does make money off of that deal. Please remember that everything here is just for fun. This is not professional gambling advice. And if you or anyone you know has a problem with gambling, please contact 1-800-GAMBLER.